Hello, I'm Georgina Robinson.
And I'm Tom Deason.
Welcome to the Rugby World Cup Daily. Coming to you from Japan every day throughout the 2019 Rugby World Cup.
G'day rugby lovers, it's Tom Deason from the Sydney Morning Herald and The Age joining you from Tokyo once again for the Rugby World Cup Daily Podcast. Pleasure to be having a chat to you tonight. It's about 24 hours since the Wallabies result on Sunday, a 29-25 loss, which, yeah, you could say it sort of opened up Pool D a little bit. We have a bit of a clearer picture as to how that is panning out. Australia, if they can beat Uruguay and Georgia, and England can manage to beat Argentina and France, provided that Wales don't have some big capitulation, it's looking like the Wallabies will face England in a quarterfinal. But we'll get to that in a little bit first. Look, there's been no shortage of uproar, analysis, tweets, commentary around this game 24 hours after the loss, Australia's first 2 hours at a World Cup since 1987. Look, obviously, the major talking point has still been the Samu Karevi hit on Reece Patchell, the substitute around, you know, as a ball carrier, being penalised for that. Look, Samu expressed his frustration after the game in the post-match mix zone, whereby the journalist sort of run down after the press conference and speak to him. He did a bit of media today in Tokyo. He was up at the team hotel down in Tokyo Bay. And this is what he had to say about the tackle. I'll just play a bit of audio for you now.
Look, I respect the ref's decision. He's in a high-pressured environment. A lot of calls has been going on, and you know, I feel for them. You know, they're under a lot of pressure with all the media and that. But look, I understand the call. But it's a tough one. I've been running like that my whole career. So especially when you slow it down to that pace, gives a different picture. Either seeing it in normal pace, and I'm just getting back into my stride when as I'm going for the bump. I'm just continuing my run, so I'm not trying to go towards his neck or anything. So it's a tough one, but look, I understand the refs calling and what they're under.
Everyone kind of talks about just wanting that consistency, I guess, from referees, and is that kind of the frustrating thing for you guys as players? Do you feel like there's not enough clarity around those sort of things?
Yeah, I think that's what players want, is just the consistency overall. But look, like I said, the referees are under a lot of pressure, a lot of scrutiny from everyone. They're doing the best job as they can. You guys got to remember, they're humans as well. You know, they've got families as well, and they're world class. And players don't want to be scrutinized by their decision making as well. And I know the referees, if though we want consistency, it's a very high pressured environment. It's a high pressured tournament. So look, whatever the call is, we've just got to cop it. I'm just disappointed in myself because I cost the team 3 points. It's 3 points we could have gone without. And you saw how close the game was last night, how it came to the wire. So that's what I'm really disappointed about. I'm not disappointed in what the referee's ruling was. I'm not disappointed in how Reece was tackling. I'm just disappointed in myself that I cost the team that those points.
Look, that chat went for about 16 minutes all up. Samu was not grilled, but just trying to... He was very happy to speak and get his opinion out there, as he was the night before. But look, he just wants consistency, and so do the Wallabies. They are... it's very confusing for them. They're upset. They feel the world is against them. A conspiracy theory of sorts, if you will, just judging by Michael Checker's comments after the match. And look, you can argue that they do feel a little aggrieved, and rightly so to a certain extent. Samu talked, he made a joke. He said today that he was considering a switch to rugby league, and given the way they police it, and he described some of the collisions in rugby league as nice, which I thought was quite funny. And ironic, given that he's actually not going to rugby league. He's got to deal with Suntory for 3 years in Japan. So he will do that before the Wallabies try and get him back for the 2023 World Cup, unless he just enjoys the end too much and the culture over here, which is actually one of the more surprising parts of the World Cup, and how exciting and fun that has been for all the reporters and fans over here as well. But look, you do have to feel a little bit sorry for Samu, and the Wallabies will have to chat about this. Not just the Wallabies, but teams all over the world. You would imagine that there's coaches here who are very confused and do share a similar sentiment to Michael Checker, who said at his post-match press conference that he genuinely didn't know what the rules were anymore, and they're very, very confused about that. We broke down the incident a little bit on the podcast on Sunday after the game, so we won't go into as much detail there, but it's worth a read. I filed a piece today on Samu's reaction, what that all means, and just sort of a bit more of a deep dive into the incident as well, which you can read on rugbyheaven.com.au. But, you know, there was also some footage emerge and a photo of Gareth Davis taking an intercept, not off Will Genia, but actually a little bit earlier in the game, in the 7th minute, off Bernard Foley. And James O'Connor was luckily there to defend that. And, you know, it looks like Davis has actually put his forearm up into sort of James O'Connor's neck, chin region. Look, when you compare the pair side by side, you can argue that there is inconsistency, but look, let's just make a point that bringing up footage and, you know, sharing it on Twitter, that's all well and good, and it does paint a picture. I know there was obviously some footage as well of Beauden Barrett, you know, fending away Colby from South Africa, and, you know, looked very similar to what Samu did. If you had the time and patience, you could probably go through a number of tests already at this World Cup and bring up incidents that do look very similar in terms of the ball carrier raising their arms and probably making contact higher on the defender. We won't go into all of that. It's unnecessary, but look, World Rugby has an absolute dog's breakfast on their hand. A number of people who aren't even rugby people are contacting me and just saying, mate, what the bloody hell is happening? And you try and explain what's going on. But if you've got a guy like Michael Checker who is unsure, and, you know, clearly there are other coaches and administrators and players who are a little bit unsure of what's going on, well, how does that bode for your general rugby fan or your bit part rugby fan who comes in and watches the game? It was quite funny. I saw Quade Cooper's tweet shortly after the game. It was quite humorous about World Rugby's promotional guide for the 2023 World Cup in France, and it was a picture of some people playing Oztag. So look, Matt Giddo also tweeted, you know, let the boys play. So look, there's a lot of opposition to this, but we will move on. You can obviously consume that on rugbyheaven.com, that story. Just a few other little bits and pieces that I wanted to talk about after the game. It just got overwashed, the result, a lot, didn't it? Like, there was so much. Obviously, we filed a match report and a bit of analysis, but the talking point at the press conference was so much about that, and you just get the sense that every game this World Cup, you just feel like there is going to be an incident by the referee that is going to be policed and dissected and debated by us, the media, the fans. And, you know, obviously players behind closed doors as well. Everyone has an opinion on it. And it's just a very little, it's just a tumultuous time for rugby at the moment. And at a World Cup, it's the last place you want to be doing that. You know, you don't want to, as Michael Checker alluded to as well, you don't want to spook the referees. And they are as spooked as they could possibly be at the moment. So it will be interesting to see how they react to that, whether there's a little bit more leniency towards the players in some of these regards, but at the same time, the Wallabies could cry foul and a number of other teams that feel like they've been on the wrong side of the ledger. A couple of other things we didn't touch on the podcast last night, just some individual performances worth noting. I thought that Rory Arnold was excellent for the Wallabies. Like, he made 11 tackles. I think Pocock was next best with 9, and maybe Tolu Latu had 9 or 8 as well. I know Rory did get pinned for that high tackle on Alan Wynne-Jones, which actually wasn't influential in Wales scoring points, but you could argue that they did have an advantage, and Dan Bigger kicked across field. Hadley Parks goes over the top of Marika Corabetti and they score. You know, would they have done that if they didn't have the advantage? I'm not sure. The other one too was Adam Ashley Cooper. I thought his selection was very much justified. He scored a try. His 18th in Rugby World Cups, I believe, his 4th World Cup. Look, that was just some great experience. Obviously, a nice kick from Bernard over there. That was probably the highlight of his game, to be fair. And it was funny, I came back from the game last night, didn't hit the town, believe it or not, and watched it all over again. And the broadcaster showed Michael Checker erupted. He was just very, very animated when he scored that try. And it was almost like that's why I got him back moment. So Adam Ashley Cooper, tick there. Then I suppose the big question as well, when you look at how they played, you know, Dane Haylett-Petty, I thought, had a great game. Alan Alatoa did some probably unnoticed dirty work there as well. David Pocock, whilst not as influential at the breakdown, did give that last pass off to Dane Haylett-Petty, which is important. Michael Hooper, quieter at times, knocked on a few times, got pinned at the rucks a couple of times, but did score a try and, you know, workmanlike as always. But the big question now, and Matt Tamua touched on it as well in a bit of a chat, which I've written a piece on tomorrow as well for the paper, is just what do you do against Uruguay? You do run the risk of not playing your best side and then therefore leaving yourself exposed to losing a game, which would be very close to the Wallabies getting booted out of the World Cup. So obviously they don't want to do that. No matter how it is spun this week, obviously Uruguay did beat Fiji and that was a major upset. But look, Uruguay ranked 18th in the world and there's no excuses for the Wallabies not to pile on the points against them. So whatever team they pick, they should win. Let's just get that straight. But Tamua did, you know, he was a little bit hesitant, you know, about the idea of chopping and changing your sides. He didn't explicitly mention it, but I mean, Johnny Sexton didn't play for Ireland against Japan. And we know what happened there, a 19-12 result, the biggest upset in Japan's World Cup history. Probably in my books, now they've had a few more days to reflect on that, comparing that to what happened in Brighton in 2015 when Japan beat South Africa. So in saying that, it's up to the Wallabies whether they want to pick a slightly stronger side as opposed to, you know, a side that they may have had in their mind had they beaten Wales, which would have meant they could have taken the Uruguay and Georgia games slightly easier. The number 10 spot is obviously going to take up a lot of debate. Matt Tamua, in my opinion, has probably done enough there to take Bernard's spot at 10, and I would be happy to stick with him throughout. Ideally, you want to have the same halves partner as well, be that Nick White or Will Genia. They've both shown good glimpses off the bench. I'm not sure who you picked there, but that's someone to do that who is well above my pay grade. The other thing, too, is they're going to name a team on Wednesday instead of Thursday ahead of Saturday's game. Usually it's sort of 48 hours out, but they're going to name it a little bit earlier. Look, the other talking points as well, interestingly, it came to a head today that would have been the biggest comeback in World Cup history had the Wallabies managed to run down Wales, who were ahead 26-8 in the second half. It would have actually topped the 15-point lead that Romania mowed down against Canada in the 2015 pool stages. They were trailing 15-0 after 53 minutes, ended up winning 17-15. It actually would have, and the Wallabies' biggest World Cup comeback was actually against Fiji last week when they came back from 9 points down, we are told. A few other things to just sort of canvas over before the Uruguay game on Saturday in Oita. Jordan Patea is fit. He will be eligible for selection. Might be a good time to rest Marika Korobedi or perhaps, you know, give Adam Ashley Cooper a week off and then pick Adam Ashley Cooper maybe the week after against George if he's still their first choice winger. And then you've got the Reece Hodge conundrum when he comes back from his suspension for the quarterfinals, assuming Australia make it. Just a quick breakdown of what this all means for the Wallabies now with two games remaining. So everyone in Pool D has played two games. Wales are on top of the pool on 9 points. Australia, one win from two starts on 6 points. Georgia on 5 points. Uruguay, four. And Fiji, two. So upcoming games. The obviously Australia-England game for a quarter final looks likely at the moment, but in terms of more immediately, we have Georgia-Fiji on Thursday, then Australia-Uruguay on the Saturday. We have Wales-Fiji the following Wednesday, which is a massive game. Obviously, Australia would love for Fiji to knock off Wales, and I believe they're a chance, definitely a chance, depending on what side Wales pick as well. And then you've got Australia-Georgia in Shizuoka the following Friday. So 2 6-day turnarounds for the Australians heading into their last game. And then, you know, comparatively, look at a side like England and, I mean, at this stage, it looks like they will top their pool, meaning that they would play the second-ranked team Australia's pool. But for them to go on and win the tournament, like, that is a massive effort. We're having a few drinks with a few Irish guys and last night, and one of them just talked about the fact that for them to win the World Cup, they're pretty much going to have to complete a grand slam, if you will. They're going to have to beat Argentina, which is their next game coming up, who are 10th in the world, right? And then you have France, who are 7th, and that rounds out the pool stages. Now, that's going to be two physically taxing games. They're not going to be able to rest blokes in those games. Mentally, yeah, sure, they'll be able to get up for Australia. Eddie will be, you know, doing everything possible and, you know, vice versa for the Wallabies. But then they would have to be the Wallabies in a quarter final, potentially, who are ranked sixth in the world, then face New Zealand in a semi-final. Like, that is an absolutely brutal run of four games. New Zealand first in the world currently. And then, depending on what happens on the other side of the draw, if England were to go through undefeated, which I don't think they would in that period, possibly play a team like South Africa in a final, who are ranked fifth in the world, but that's just absolute gibber because they're far better than that. Look, interesting how it all plays out. There'll be far more to discuss regarding everything else from the Wales game and leading into the Uruguay game. Interested to hear your thoughts, comments. Hit me up on Twitter at Tom Deason and my colleague Georgina Robinson at G-Rob with two E's. We are thoroughly loving the reviews from the podcast. It's nice to know that a few more than friends and family are listening, and it's helping people's commute a little bit more than perhaps normal. So thanks for the feedback. We're having a great time over here. We'll endeavour to get some more colour into the podcast from time to time. Might be a slightly quieter week. Heading into the Uruguay fixture as footy finals back home with the Raiders and Roosters playing out. So stay tuned. Look into Rugby Heaven for your rugby news. And it has been an absolute pleasure. I'm going to go get a beverage. Take it easy and sayonara.